Well, good morning. Thank you so much for tuning in today to Grant County Coronavirus Update. You are here on Gila Membres Community Radio, KURU 89.1 FM, down here in Silver City, New Mexico, online at gmcr.org. I'll be your host for today, Marcus Hansen. And on this week's Coronavirus Update, Jamie Newton will be interviewing Dr. Marie C. Weil, a bilingual clinical health psychologist, on mental health impacts of the coronavirus pandemic and more. But first, the news. The New Mexico Department of Health on Tuesday announced 174 new cases of coronavirus for a total of 190,064 cases, with 11 additional deaths for a total of 3,903 deaths here in New Mexico. This is 1,400 new cases and 43 deaths over the past week. 127 individuals remain hospitalized in New Mexico, which is a decrease of 10 since last week. And last Friday, New Mexico reached the milestone of 1 million vaccinations administered for COVID-19. As of Tuesday, 38.8% of New Mexicans have received their first dose of the two-dose vaccine for COVID-19, while 23.6% have been fully vaccinated. This is according to the COVID-19 vaccine dashboard. Here in Grant County, the Department of Health reported 14 new COVID-19 cases since last week. This brings it to a total of 1,590 cases of COVID-19. There are 187 active cases in the county as of Tuesday, which is a drop of 59, and no deaths have been reported here in Grant County since last week. 35 people in Grant County have lost their lives due to COVID-19 since the beginning of the pandemic a year ago, and the Department of Health also reports that 40.2% of Grant County residents are partially vaccinated and 20.2% are fully vaccinated. 51.9% of the county is registered for the vaccine as of Tuesday. Today, you can join New Mexico Department of Health Secretary Tracy C. Collins, and along with Dr. Michael Edwards and Human Services Department Secretary Dr. David R. Scrace, for a COVID-19 webinar update that will be at 1 o'clock on the New Mexico Human Services Department Facebook page, which you can go online and on Facebook and just look up New Mexico Human Services Department. By definition, the state seems to have moved into Phase 1C of vaccine distribution. This group includes New Mexicans over 60 years of age and other essential workers who cannot work remotely, like food service, utility, and communications workers, among others, as listed on the State Department of Health's website. Groups in Phase 1A and 1B do remain eligible for the vaccine as well, and the state predicts that New Mexico should move into Phase 2 in mid to late April, and this phase includes members of the general public not included in the above phases. However, anyone can register for the vaccine and is encouraged to do so online at vaccinenm.org. And if you have questions about the COVID vaccine registration process, need help getting registered, or are homebound, or know someone who may or may not be able to easily access a COVID-19 vaccination clinic, you can call the new hotline hosted by the Silver City Fire Department, and that number is 575-597-7029. Again, that's 575-597-7029, or you can email grantcountynmcares@gmail.com. Again, that's grantcountynmcares@gmail.com. And if you'd like to see a detailed list of those eligible for the vaccine at the moment, you can go to cv.nmhealth.org. And talking with friends and family about the benefits of getting a COVID-19 vaccine can be hard, and you can help without listening or by listening without judgment and identifying the root of their concerns. Things to remember to help. Open discussion include listening to questions with empathy, ask open-ended questions to explore concerns, ask permission to share information, help them find their own reasons to get vaccinated, and help make their vaccine happen. Again, that's vaccinenm.org or call 575-597-7029. Again, that's 575-597-7029, or you can email grantcountynmcares@gmail.com. And the COVID-19 vaccine does help your body learn how to defend itself from the disease, and you may feel uncomfortable for 2 or 3 days after you receive the vaccine. So after being vaccinated, you may feel some side effects such as muscle pain, soreness in your arm, body aches, chills, feeling tired, and a fever. But side effects are a sign that your body is building up protection from COVID-19. It may be uncomfortable, but it's much less harmful than getting COVID-19. And a reminder that the CDC has said people are considered fully vaccinated from COVID-19 for 2 weeks after they've received their second dose in a two-dose series, those the Pfizer, BioNTech, or the Moderna vaccines, or 2 weeks after they received a single-dose vaccine like the Johnson & Johnson vaccine. But a reminder, the following recommendations apply to non-healthcare settings for those that are fully vaccinated. And fully vaccinated people can visit with other fully vaccinated people indoors without wearing masks or physical distancing. You can also visit with unvaccinated people from a single household who are at low risk for severe COVID-19 disease indoors without wearing a mask or physical distancing. And for now, fully vaccinated people should continue to take steps to protect yourself and others in many situations, like wearing a mask, staying at least 6 feet apart from others, and avoiding crowds and poorly ventilated spaces. Make sure to take precautions whenever you're in public, such as gathering with unvaccinated people for more than one other or another household, visiting with unvaccinated persons at a increased risk of severe illness from death or COVID-19 or with a person at increased risk. Do avoid medium and large size gatherings. Delay domestic and international travel if you can. Watch out for the symptoms of COVID-19, especially if you've been around someone who is sick, and you'll still need to follow guidance in your workplace as well. To find out more guidelines, go online to cdc.gov. The state's red to green public health order, in which counties are evaluated over a two-week period for daily cases and test positivity rates, will be updated today and will likely follow the press conference this afternoon at 1. Counties not meeting daily case thresholds of 8 or fewer cases per 100,000 population and test positivity rates below 5% follow the strictest red guidelines, meaning those meeting at least one of those benchmarks have some expanded capacity at yellow, and green counties, those meeting both requirements, have far fewer restrictions. And the new color of turquoise indicates counties that have reached the green level for two consecutive biweekly updates. Silver Consolidated Schools is looking for qualified individuals to serve as substitute teachers for the district. Individuals will have flexibility in areas to substitute and buildings to serve in. Pay is based on educational background and experience. Those who are interested should contact Smith Madrid at smadrid@silverschools.org. That's SMADRID at silverschools.org. Or call the following number. That's 575-956-2000. That's 575-956-2000. The New Mexico State Bar is holding a consumer debt bankruptcy workshop from 6 to 8 p.m. today. That's March 24th, and that'll be via video and teleconference. At the workshop, an attorney will give a group presentation on bankruptcy. This is according to a news release. After the presentation, a one-on-one free consultation will be given by phone to people who register in advance. Call 505-797-6094 to register. Now look at the local COVID testing schedule. Hidalgo Medical Services is making testing available Monday through Friday from 8:30 a.m. to 2:30 p.m. at both their Silver City and Lordsburg locations. Call 575-388-1511 here in Silver City for an appointment, and call 545-542-8384 in Lordsburg. Again, that's 575-388-1511 in Silver City, 575-542-8384 in Lordsburg. Additionally, the Grant County Public Health Office and the Hidalgo County Public Health Office are providing free testing. Here in Grant County, the Public Health Office is providing testing every Tuesday from 8 a.m. to 10 a.m. and then from 2 to 4. Testing at the Hidalgo County Public Health Office is conducted every Thursday from 9 to 11 a.m. To register for either, go online to cvtestreg.nmhealth.org. And a reminder that free at-home saliva testing kits are available to all New Mexicans at no cost. That's through Vault Health. If you'd like to find out more, just go to learn.vaulthealth.com/NM. That's learn.vaulthealth.com/NM. And for more ways to get tested, just go online to grantcountycoronavirusupdate.org. The COVID-19 Housing Cost Assistance Program is providing emergency housing grants to income-eligible households and residents of tribal lands experiencing financial hardship due to the COVID-19 health crisis. These grants are housing assistance payments made on behalf of income-eligible applicants and residents of tribal lands up to $1,500 per month for a period of up to three consecutive months, to maintain housing and or reduce housing cost delinquency due to the COVID-19 health crisis. The New Mexico Mortgage Finance Authority will pay your past due housing payments directly to your landlord, mortgage or loan servicer, escrow company, or other housing provider. The assistance does not have to be repaid. Applications will be accepted beginning March 4th. To request the paper application be mailed to you, go to 505-308-4206. Again, that's 505-308-4206. And due to the COVID-19 pandemic, there is assistance available to those who are not traditionally eligible for unemployment benefits. As relates to the need, the New Mexico Department of Workforce Solutions will open applications for Mixed Earners Unemployed Compensation, otherwise known as MEUC, starting Wednesday, March 10th. This compensation provides $100 in extra benefits to individuals with at least $5,000 in net income from self-employment in the tax year prior to their initial unemployment insurance claim. Note, under the American Rescue Plan Act, the deadline for MEUC applications has been extended to the first week of September. To find out more, go to dws.state.nm.us. And it's tax season, and the Treasury Department, the IRS, announced that the federal income tax filing due date for individuals for the 2020 tax year will be automatically extended from April 15th to May 17th of this year. The IRS will be providing formal guidance in the coming days. Individual taxpayers can also postpone federal income tax payments for the 2020 tax year due on April 15th to, again, May 17th, without penalties and interest, regardless of the amount owed. This postponement applies to individual taxpayers, including individuals who pay self-employment tax. Penalties, interest, and additions to tax will begin to accrue on any remaining unpaid balances as of May 17th. Individual taxpayers will automatically avoid interest and penalties on taxes paid by the 17th of May. For more information, go to irs.gov. And if you qualify for a 2020 economic stimulus payment, also known as the individual payment for COVID relief bill, but have not yet received it, make sure to claim your recovery for a rebate credit on your 2020 tax return, which can be found. You can find out more by going online to irs.gov. And printed copies of the Federal Form 1040 instruction books and New Mexico tax forms are available outside the Silver City Public Library's Cooper Street doors during curbside hours. They also have AARP free tax assistance program packets, which are in a box by the doors. You can also get online tax help from AARP by going online to aarp.org. You can also, just Google AARP New Mexico. The local AARP tax help number is 575-342-1892. Again, that's 575-342-1892. And a reminder that if you'd like to find out these resources and more, you can go online to our website, grantcountycoronavirusupdate.org. If you have any information you'd like to send our way, just send it to info@grantcountycoronavirusupdate.org. You can also find us on Facebook at Grant County Coronavirus Update. And you can find replays of previous interviews at gmcr.org. Next up, Jamie Newton is joined by Dr. Marie C. Weil, a bilingual clinical psychologist, and I'll be talking about mental health impacts of the coronavirus pandemic and more.
This is the Coronavirus Update interview of March 24, 2021 on Gila Mimbres Community Radio and KURU 89.1 FM in Silver City, New Mexico. I'm Jamie Newton, your host for today. My guest is Dr. Marie Weil, a bilingual clinical health psychologist who graduated from Silver High School and now practices here after gaining decades of experience across the United States and in Latin America and the Caribbean. Our topic is mental health impacts of the coronavirus pandemic, that's both direct and indirect impacts, and how people can maintain their resiliency and well-being. Dr. Weil, thank you so much for being with us on Coronavirus Update.
Thank you. It's an honor to engage in professional service of my community, Jamie.
Dr. Weil, in your experience and from what you learned from other mental health professionals in our region and nationwide, what are some of the major mental health impacts associated with the coronavirus? And what can people do for themselves and others? We'll talk about these topics, of course, in more detail later in the program, but let's start with an overview.
Sure. So as a clinical health psychologist, I approach this as our health and wellness. That is our emotional health, our physical health, our social relationships, our psychological health, and of course, our spiritual health, and a discussion of people's resilience and ways of coping. Our body system works together, Jamie. It's not separate. So just like a car moves on four tires, if we have four flat tires and we only put air in one of those, our car doesn't move very well, does it? So in relation to what we're calling the pandemic, some folks have actually termed this a syndemic. That's S-Y-N-D-E-M-I-C. And that really means it's an aggregation of two or more sequential epidemics impacting multiple levels. For example, the impact of corona or COVID-19, as it's usually called, the infection, the death, the unemployment, the physical health toll, as well as the physical health disparities, and of course, racial violence and many, many other things that we will discuss. But in particular, looking at declines in our physical and emotional health, the way that we cope, and in particular, unhealthy ways of coping, for example, increased use of alcohol and substances, and the increased symptoms of depression, anxiety, insomnia or sleep disturbances, and of course, the greater risk for suicide. And just couching that in terms of where we are in Grant County, pre-pandemic, that is before 2020, we already struggled with being on the top highest in the county, for example, the top third highest in New Mexico for deaths by suicide, and 10th highest for deaths by drug overdose. And as most of our listeners know, New Mexico remains number one in the nation for deaths involving alcohol. So as an overview, I'd like to just end the overview with a quote from my colleague and Indigenous psychologist, Dr. Art Bloom. And he says, "The world is an interdependent system in which we are only as strong as our most vulnerable member, and we are collectively impacted. As others have stated, and I don't have a person to quote, but no one is safe until we all are safe."
Well, that last point, we are all in this necessarily and unavoidably together, is one that leading American specialists in the pandemic, like Dr. Anthony Fauci and the World Health Organization director, also have repeatedly told us, make us a global community. This is a situation in which no one can say, I'll take care of myself and the people closest to me, and we'll be fine. Because unless we're all taken care of, all of us remain in danger, and the pandemic will continue to be our reality. Dr. Weil, you've referred to major mental health challenges, depression, domestic abuse, suicide, alcohol, substance abuse, as being really very severe problems in New Mexico before a year and a little more ago, we realized that we now had a spreading coronavirus pandemic to cope with. Have these and other problems already severe become even more frequent or severe during the pandemic?
Absolutely. To couch it before the pandemic, about half, that's 50%, about half of all adults in the United States experience what we call a behavioral health condition. And that is during our lifetime. And the majority of those are also managing a chronic health condition at the same time. So the American Psychological Association does an annual Stress in America survey, and they certainly describe what we're facing as a national mental health crisis, not just in terms of now, but how we're looking at the future in terms of serious health and social consequences for years to come. And results of that survey indicated that more than half of adults are negatively impacting, noticing things like changes to our mood, verbal outbursts, body tension, which can impact lots of physical health conditions, and the emotional consequences of stress. And I recently reported in another area for Grant County that even our healthcare providers are experiencing what we call burnout that moderately or severely impacts their lives. And I believe this is very important because sometimes people think that the average person is not impacted or that I should be handling or coping better if I am the provider of my family, if I'm the worker, if I'm the mother, so on and so forth. And what we know is a large percentage of physicians reported burnout.
So our healthcare professionals that is physical health, people who respond directly to infection, hospitalization, and also people who provide mental health and social services have been experiencing excessive demands as well. And I guess there's kind of a paradox, Dr. Weil, in that all of us, of course, want to maintain our strength and our ability to cope, and we want to give encouragement to other people by showing how well off we are and how we're managing and encouraging them to manage. Similarly, that can give the illusion to a person that she or he is suffering more than others, and that can be problematic, can it not?
Absolutely. It's important that we couch our discussion in terms of our bodies. We as human beings, our bodies and minds are built to protect us, right? We want to promote our survival. So that means making it through the tough times. What we know is that stress can bring about disruptions to life, either temporarily, but when it's long-term, it can be overwhelming. So we might be able to deal with a loss and experience some disruptions to our sleep in a temporary basis, but then be able to catch up when things get, quote unquote, back to normal when those stressors are removed. But the toll, the emotional toll, the physical toll, the social in terms of our relationships, our ability to talk and gather with other people, even those that we would normally do so in a work environment, the emotional toll and the spiritual toll is longer lasting, and those chronic effects really begin to break down our body and mind, our body's natural system, because we have a really tough time trying to cope with some of these excessive circumstances. And I would also add that in particular for communities of color, so Black, Indigenous, and persons of color, certainly experience these stressors and these traumatic stressors at greater levels that intensify this stress and emotional toll. And that's really important because our racialized experiences shape how we think, how we develop, and shapes our behavior. So in terms of providing health and behavioral health treatment, our providers need to be culturally and linguistically responsive to our individual needs and our group needs as it relates to that particular person.
It really is a comprehensive kind of situation. And I'm hearing you say that whatever we were challenged by before the pandemic, in many ways that's become more intense and harder to cope with as a result of the pandemic. Let me ask you about a particular group that we often see reported on as being especially vulnerable and especially affected. You've mentioned racial, ethnic groups, but seniors, an age cohort, especially really elderly people who are vulnerable and, of course, having lived longer, more likely to have pre-existing conditions that make them more vulnerable if they're infected, but also more dependent on families and support networks. Dr. Weil, what special consequences has the coronavirus had for seniors and for their families and support networks?
That's a really good point. And a lot of my work is focused on the older adult and geriatric population. What I will start by saying is about a third, so about 30% of Grant Countyans are age 65 and older. I'm going to start with kind of a startling statistic, but it needs to be said. Suicide is more lethal in later life than at other points in life, and it's related to older adults who die by firearms. And some of the risk factors, so risk factors are things that increase a person's risk for suicide. Now, given the demographics that I told you about Grant County previously, it's extremely relevant. It's something that we talked about, we felt, we grieved, we lost while I was in school here. And it's, of course, unfortunately still happening. But those are the following risk factors. So older adults who are male and unmarried are at greater risk. Those older adults who are struggling with depression are a greater risk for suicide. Those with physical illnesses, whether it's struggling with diabetes, chronic obstructive pulmonary disease, a dementia or mild cognitive impairment, those older adults are more at risk. Those older adults who have lost their previous level of functioning, so perhaps due to their physical illness, they're unable to function as previously, drive their car, go to their go to shopping, get around, work, volunteer. They are more at risk. And finally, this concept of being disconnected, which we can all understand from the social and physical distancing during the pandemic, but that's exacerbated, right, for older adults. Those who lack participation in the community, so maybe not being able to go for a congregate meal any longer, or maybe not being able to go to their spiritual or church place of worship practice because they have a very significant underlying health condition and are trying to protect themselves. Those that live alone, those that lack hobbies and might be socially isolated, or those with no family or perhaps the family relationships are disrupted, there's some discord. And of course, those with no confidence. All of these kinds of things have been significantly exacerbated in the pandemic. And one of the things that we're able to do through this interview is utilize technology. It's not uncommon for older adults, one, to maybe not have access to that technology, being comfortable with it, those sorts of things. And when folks are missing appointments because maybe appointments are canceled or they're unable to go or travel and not participate in their healthcare appointments, that is also something that we are seeing exacerbated. I know in my own personal experience, I'm first and foremost a caregiver for an older adult family member. And during the pandemic, we have gone to the hospital several times. But in a recent situation that required going to the hospital, the fear from my family member was, I don't want to get the virus, right? So I had to work with the healthcare provider and really work with my family member to encourage them, right? To ensure that things would be set up and there were protections in place to get the needed healthcare. So that's another item that is paramount in terms of exacerbating, for example, existing health conditions.
You've talked about a number of ways in which seniors, and you said, if I heard this right, that about a third of the population of Grant County is age 65 or older. So we have a lot of seniors, and many of those people are much older than 65. So I don't think it would be possible for me to summarize the many ways that you just went through that seniors are at greater risk, ranging all the way from being more vulnerable as a result of more frequent pre-existing conditions to getting infected, more fearful, often less able to get out and around, less able to meet their own needs like grocery shopping, and more vulnerable to experiences that might even make them feel suicidal. Of course, for people like yourself with a particular individual that you take special responsibility for, there are individual factors that would determine just what you do to be helpful. But let me ask you about what I think is a very common situation. A person knows of one or more neighbors who used to go 5 days a week for lunch at the local senior center, go to their church on the weekend and see people they've known well for many years, now are much more isolated than that and may need help. And yet my hypothetical neighbor doesn't want to be nosy, invade privacy, be disruptive, but does want to be helpful. Is there any general guidance that you could give to a more capable, younger, more able-bodied person who really would like to be helpful, but not in a way that demeans an elderly person or suggests that that person is old and frail and can't cope, you know?
That's a really good point. And I'm going to answer as a human being. And that is, if you're concerned about someone, which I believe we need to be concerned about our community and ourselves, is to reach out. You know, there is nothing kinder than basic humanity in terms of letting another person know, I care about you and I am here to listen. I am here to pick up the phone and give you a call and check in on you. I am here to bring over some masks when you come out. And being able to ask if the person is able to, you know, talk about what their needs are and let them know. And also, it's not just about asking what they need, but also potentially presenting a menu of options that might be within your repertoire of behaviors, because some people are very good at providing emotional support. Some people are very good at providing tangible support. So picking up some things, some medications at the pharmacy, going grocery shopping, transportation. Some people are good at both. So it's always helpful to be able to understand if you're the person that's reaching out to your neighbor. And again, I do this. I have many neighbors who frequently do this with our elders in our neighborhood, is to reach out as a human being first and talk to the person, because that's helping to decrease that isolation. Perhaps it looks a little different than coming over and providing, for example, a Bible study in the person's home, but letting them know that you care, right? And providing some potential options. I can also tell you that the state has set up particular hotlines and helplines. I hope that the radio station has those. If not, you know, we should make sure that we have those available, so that if a person does need help, if they need to go to the grocery store and they perhaps don't have a neighbor, somebody that's calling and offering, that they can call the New Mexico hotline that has been set up specifically for that person and that resource, and then bringing it back to the community, because there are many community volunteers that are providing some of those services. So it's kind of like, be a friend, right? Acknowledge what you're able to provide as that friend or not, and potentially link up the person with other resources that they may not know about, have access to, or can even register, for example, to get the vaccine online.
And Dr. Y, you've just mentioned sources of help. Something that I've been especially impressed about here in Grant County during the pandemic is how well and in how many ways people have been guided to those resources. So yes, gmcr.org, the radio station's website, and our partner comprehensive resource website, Grant County Coronavirus Updates.org. We have listings of these resources, but a lot of people don't have access to the internet. So there are telephone numbers that are publicized widely on flyers and posters, and the Grant County Beat and the Grant County newspaper, the Silver City Daily Press, publicize these things. There are ways of reaching out, and we will have these also on our website along with this interview. So you've spoken about personal and practical support. A neighbor might simply tap on the door, step back to a respectful social distance, and say, I'm out for my walk. How about if I sit on that piece of firewood over there and we have a little chat, and help to relieve the social isolation? And there could be a call saying, I'm on my way into town today. I'm going by the grocery store. If you want to give me a list, I'll be happy to pick up anything you need. Practical sources of support. Dr. Weil, the last time the United States and the world experienced a pandemic on this scale was 102 years ago, when it was a major flu that happened. We're not experienced with this in our time. How have people been reacting to uncertainty, fear, mixed messages from leaders at all levels? For example, here in our state, we're being guided by public health authorities and the governor's office to continue to wear masks and to practice social distancing, even where it's not required, to be aware that we should be more cautious rather than less cautious. And on both sides of us, we have states where they are opening up. In Texas, as the governor put it, 100%, even though there are warnings from the national level and states like ours, where we can't really isolate very well from the people right on the other side of an imaginary line that is the border between the states, there are warnings that we should not let down our guard. So it's very easy for people to have the unavoidable uncertainty and fear of this unusual situation we haven't experienced in our lifetimes, be aggravated by having people at high levels tell them conflicting things. What are the consequences of that in your judgment, Dr. Watt?
Yes. And if I may, before I answer that, may I say one more thing about older adults?
Go right ahead.
So most older adults have Medicare as an insurance. And it's important that older adults who might be seeking counseling or other kinds of behavioral health care know that Medicare covers that. And it's part of the Part B outpatient services. So it would be covered at 80%, just like any other outpatient service. But in particular, during the pandemic, Medicare has authorized not only sessions through a computer, what we would call telehealth, but also sessions via telephone. So audio only plus audio plus video conference. And that's very important because many people don't have access to the computer video part of it, but could talk to somebody on the phone. So I wanted to make sure that that was covered. And folks, if they've attended healthcare, physical healthcare appointments, realize that. So now to your, wow, what a doozy of a question, Jamie, in terms of that. I'm certainly not qualified to answer all of that, but I will answer from, you know, within my scope of practice and what I'm also knowledgeable as a clinical health psychologist who practices from research and science in terms of evidence-based practice. So, you know, one of the things is that when we talk about anxiety, it's not just limited to thinking about mental health. What is anxiety? Anxiety is our system's bodily response, as well as mind, our thinking, our behavior response to something that is considered a threat. Okay, a virus that can potentially take our life and make us very, very ill is certainly one of those threats. We actually have validated measures that evaluate how people are fearing the coronavirus, right? And everything that comes with it. So that, you know, it's an anxiety specifically related to the possibility of infection and death. Well, grief and death during the time of coronavirus have an impact on families, and especially families that have experienced multiple losses and the clustering of death, because families can transmit, right? So many families are having losses and death on multiple levels within their same family. The burden of bereavement is especially worsened or heightened for Black, Indigenous, and persons of color. Prolonged and complicated grief. So I have another very short story. I've lost several colleagues during this time. The first back in April in New York, it was my colleague, Dr. Jean Lau Chin, a prominent Chinese American psychologist who did a lot of work in leadership and diversity. Both she and her husband died in the same hospital, in the same area. And I was devastated that what was happening at that time. And now fast forward it to the relaxation of wearing masks and also the greater knowledge and information that we're gaining about how effective the vaccinations are at preventing infection or preventing the really detrimental physical effects up to including death and hospitalization and death. So psychologists, of course, are at the forefront of understanding how people use and disseminate information, or I should say misinformation and inaccurate information, especially as it relates to vaccine behaviors, right? So we want people to get vaccinated. We're aware that there are trust issues, that people are distrustful of vaccinations, distrustful of the healthcare environment, what we know has occurred in terms of our history. But given that psychologists, again, are experts in health behavior as well as psychiatric problems. We're involved in treatment, but we're also involved in the promotion of public health responses. So we couch that within our values and our ways that we have been socialized. So, and it's not to say one is better than the other, but the United States of America and our world is extremely diverse. We're all brought up differently based upon our experiences, based upon our lived experiences, based upon our personal and professional experiences. So it may be that someone values autonomy, that is the ability to make an individual's choices, right? And not have, quote unquote, their rights infringed upon. Whereas someone else may value the community in terms of, I will sacrifice my privileges in order to protect my loved one, my older adult, and protect those that are vulnerable in the community. And I am vulnerable. So part of it is also recognizing the vulnerability, right? The vulnerability that when a pandemic like this hits, no one is safe, right? And sometimes what we're hearing about anecdotally is folks realize it when it might be too late. So going back to history, as you indicated, and I just participated in listening to some other professionals this morning talk about this, we human beings aren't really great at learning from history. If we were, we would be doing things differently today. And it's so important that the messages, in my personal as well as professional opinion, are about taking care of the we. As I started off earlier, no one is safe until we are all safe. How can we do that? By acknowledging the values that drive our behavior, our individual behavior, as well as our group behavior. And how might we come together and, just like people in a romantic partnership or relationship or marriage might come together, and how do they negotiate, right? How do they negotiate not just for current in terms of temporary during these stressors, but long-term? Mm-hmm. I do not envy the policymakers or the folks that are leaders to make these very difficult decisions. But like most decisions in life, the more information that we have, the more research and science behind that informs our decisions. So, for example, at the beginning of the pandemic, the Surgeon Health General did not recommend mask wearing. It wasn't until later during the pandemic. And then, you know, it's evolved to, well, yes, double mask wearing might actually be even better, right? So it's important to understand and recognize that based upon more information that we get, let us utilize that to potentially make changes, not only at the individual level, at the group and community levels, and be willing to continue to make those changes as we go on based upon what we are finding.
If you've just joined us, this is the Coronavirus Update interview of March 24th, 2021 on KURU 89.1 FM in Silver City, New Mexico, and streaming on the World Wide Web at gmcr.org. I'm Jamie Newton with Dr. Marie Weil. She's a bilingual clinical health psychologist who practices here in Silver City, New Mexico, and we're talking about mental health aspects of the coronavirus pandemic. Dr. Weil, news reports and statements from public health authorities often refer to increased stress from the pandemic due to such things as more widespread food, housing, and unemployment insecurity. Many people confront unfamiliar life demands, such as having to keep working despite anxiety and greater family responsibilities, because one's employment is defined as essential, like store and delivery personnel, building and infrastructure maintenance staff, emergency and healthcare workers. So, Dr. Weil, please talk to us about stress and resources for managing stress that we encounter in this pandemic.
So, if one did not have stable housing, water, and electricity, right, during the pandemic, when we're asking individuals to increase the frequency of hand washing and hygiene and cleanliness that we believe, right, has actually impacted the lower rates of influenza as a result of doing that, those individuals are much more deprived in terms of the disparities than individuals that have access to be able to do those kinds of things. I just want to state that off the bat. So, with respect to stress, as I indicated before, in terms of how we respond to protecting ourselves, right? And knowing that stress in the long term can be overwhelming. Well, our physical health is declining, in part due to people's unhealthy coping. For example, not engaging in regular exercise like one might have before, whether they went outside around the block or down to the park or to a gymnasium. Not eating properly and gaining weight. As I mentioned earlier, not going to medical appointments, not getting those needed medical appointments, as well as unhealthy coping by increasing consumption of alcohol and drugs, inadequate sleep, insomnia, because we are worried and we are concerned about losing our job or concerned about where the next paycheck is going to come from. Especially true related to for parents, right? Parents who are workers as well as parents and now having to teach the children and provide the environment for learning from home. Essential healthcare workers, young people, and Black Indigenous persons of color, as we indicated earlier, are especially struggling with managing stressors. And you know, you talked about essential workers. So I believe it's very important to kind of look at in Grant County, back in February of 2020, unemployment was right about 5%. And then it went up to almost 9% in May. And then in December, it went down a little bit to about 8.4%. But essential workers, healthcare workers, grocery store workers, the folks who might be working in the fields, bringing us the food, packaging the things that people might be ordering from Amazon, our healthcare workers, any of those essential workers are those workers without privileges, right, to work from home or to just not go in. Essential workers were more than twice as likely as those who are not essential workers to have received treatment from a mental health professional and to have been diagnosed with a mental health disorder since the pandemic started. And what we also know in terms of some other ways of studying how many prescriptions were prescribed for conditions like sleep, anxiety, and depression, even from a primary care doctor or primary care practice, those kinds of prescriptions rose dramatically during the pandemic. So, yes, how do we identify, right, if I am an essential worker or not, how do I identify if I am struggling? Well, if something's different, right, as a clinical health psychologist, I can't treat something, I can't problem solve until I know that there's a problem, right? So we, meaning people, the community, we need to recognize either within ourselves, within our families, within our loved ones, within our relationships, we need to recognize that something is amiss. My sleep, right? It's hard for me to get to sleep. I'm waking up way too early in the morning, or I'm sleeping, but man, I'm just feeling fatigued all the time. Or I've got a quick temper, right? Going into the store and I'm not patient. I'm not as kind, right? And maybe I'm bringing home some of those stressors, and then I'm finding that I'm just not enjoying time with my family. I'm not enjoying some of the things that I used to or feel like I've able to do that. So it's so important that we first acknowledge and accept something's just not quite right. It doesn't mean that something's wrong with me, right? As I mentioned, stress can be temporary and we can handle it okay sometimes in the short term, but the long term, maybe I got to go into work, I got to put food on the table and bring home the paycheck, but I just don't like going into work. I despise it. So we have to first recognize, accept, in order then to determine what next steps are going to make sense. Because not everybody necessarily needs to see a professional. Sometimes when folks just reach out to a trusted friend and have increased social support and maybe start walking the track or exercising a little bit more or developing a new kind of routine that is helpful and healthy instead of increasing my alcohol consumption or drug use, that might be just enough.
Dr. Marie Weil, we have only a few minutes left. Let me ask you, in relation to the last point you made about people helping people and self-reliance. Of course, the professional resources are very important, and we will include information on our website as it already is there, and also on our partner comprehensive resource website, grantcountycoronavirusupdates.org. We'll have telephone numbers and websites that people can use. But short of reliance on professionals and services, of course, are very stretched in all the ways that you've described. How can people in this rural setting effectively help one another and themselves, their friends and their family, beyond what really requires intervention by people with professional skills?
Well, as I indicated, I believe the first step is just reaching out and letting somebody else know, hey, I care, right? I'm concerned.
Being there.
Yeah. And, you know, I also want to acknowledge that sometimes that's not safe, right? Sometimes, and again, safety is a privilege that we found out during the pandemic, or it's made it more prominent, I should say, that it may be very necessary to identify, right? How can I continue to be safe for my family or my children, those sorts of things. And how to, again, balance out what is my priority, right? Being able to identify what the priorities are and being able to reach out to a trusted person. But again, many folks don't have that. So there are professionals. We do have in Grant County, for example, sexual assault services free at Silver Regional Sexual Assault Services. We also have free domestic violence and interpersonal violence services for survivors of violence as well as offenders. And they have hotlines as well as free counseling. And then, of course, you mentioned in terms of professional services, we have a number of providers in Silver City and Grant County who offer services. As I mentioned, with telehealth, it expands the options. Sometimes you can see people outside of the city and county and other parts of the state, which is sometimes very important in a rural area where folks want to maintain privacy and confidentiality. Many services are free. If you work, you might have what is called employee assistance program services. You can talk to your human relations folks. You can call your insurance card on the back. There should be a toll-free number, and you can get referrals that way.
You've been listening to the Coronavirus Update interview of March 24th, 2021. Our topic has been mental health impacts of the coronavirus pandemic and how people can care for themselves and others in this extraordinary time. My guest has been Dr. Marie Weil, a bilingual clinical health psychologist who practices here in Silver City, New Mexico. Dr. Weil, thank you very much for being with us and speaking to our listeners.
An honor.
This interview will be posted for listening and downloading at your convenience right here on the Coronavirus Update page of our website, gmcr.org, and also on the comprehensive resource website, grantcountycoronavirusupdate.org. That's a collaboration among a group of community organizations here in Grant County. Thanks, as always, to Marcus Hansen, our station manager, audio engineer, and producer of Coronavirus Update. And thank you for listening and for supporting GMCR and KURU. Be safe and be well. For Gila Mimbres Community Radio and KURU 89.1 FM in Silver City, New Mexico, I'm Jamie Newton.